Horchata, Krieg, and you just got knocked out.
Watch your mouth.
You know that's right. It's episode 7, season 5 of this podcast. And of course, the television show Psych, which starts right about now.
I've heard it both ways.
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 And welcome back to I've Heard It Both Ways. I'm your friendly neighborhood backcracker, Dr. Joe, and riding shotgun with me, as always, is the Rolex-wearing, sugar-boo-necklace-wearing, bum-thumbing, wheeling-dealing, uber-black-riding, spirit-jet-flying, son-of-a-gun, and he's having a hard time holding down those alligators. Woo! My ride-or-die Billy D, how you doing?
Woo! Hello. That was fucking amazing. What an intro. That was awesome. After that, I'm doing pretty good. I think we needed it a little bit for this particular episode.
Yes. So we are talking Psych Season 5, Episode 7, Fairy Tale. And before we talk about the process and before we dive into it, not as good as I remember, Billy.
No. Better than I remember, because I held this in very low esteem. I would say it's probably a bottom-ish episode still for me, but it was slightly funnier than I thought it was. But I think we're in the same ballpark, because I think you liked it a little more in your head, and I liked it a lot less.
I did. So this is an episode that I've watched a bunch, and is usually because Viagra. So this is one of those episodes, right? Because I love Viagra Falls so much.
It's sandwiched in between two of our favorite episodes of all time. And because
Sean 2.0 follows it, like, this just automatically gets played, like, by default, because I'll just sort of run through. And I think the reason why I sort of held it in such, you know, why I held it in higher regards,
Krieg,
was Krieg and Mama, right? Like, that scene and maybe one or two other, like, little lines, like, stand out to me. Mm-hmm. Like, but then I don't know, Bill, I was thinking about this earlier. I don't know if, like, the process of doing this show over the past year plus and really going over some of these episodes with a fine-tooth comb has made me a little jaded and really looked at some of these episodes with a little more critical eye. But I've watched this episode 3 times now over the past several days, and I found myself fast-forwarding a little bit. I'm gonna put the cards out there. This will be my lowest ranked episode of the season.
Yeah, I would say probably for me too. I have a ballpark in mind, but we'll go through it. I like to, like, talk it out a little bit. I looked at yours. I'm in the same range. I don't, like, so we'll get into it, but, like, the pacing, the storytelling, and the crime doesn't have the rhythm of a normal Psych episode, which sometimes can be good, but here it was not a strength.
So before, so what I'll say is I gave this a very low score, and it's not so much that I hated it, and I think that it is an abysmal episode. Mm-mm. I think it lacks on a couple of different levels, and it doesn't hit the typical Psych sort of strides. So what is the case? Well, before we do that, William, my friend, my ride or die, my sugar boo, my one and only. Tell the people of our process.
All right, starts with a holla, ends with the creamsicle, and then if there's a little time in between, well, Thundercats.
Oh!
And I was all excited because this starts our holla process, right?
It starts a holla process right now.
So guess what I got?
Zoom, what do you got? Shambona.
I forgot about that. I fucking love that. So as we just mentioned, this is definitely the weakest episode of the season. And I think, you know, there's a few moments.
Maybe not. Oh, maybe not. There's another episode, I think, that follows Sean 2.0 that I think is as bad.
Oh, okay.
But we'll get to that when we get there.
We'll get to that when we get there. But so far, up to this point, definitely hands down, the weakest episode. I this is one of those episodes where like there's some funny moments, but they're not like boom, like, and maybe that's because we're coming up Viagra Falls and it's just like boom, 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 boom. They nail it. Like the highs of this episode aren't really that high. There's one standout-ish moment. The guest star, who we'll get to in a minute, I don't think does a very good job. He's kind of all over the place. And for the first time in a very long time, if not for the first time, lacked any real suspense.
Yeah, no, it did. It was, you know, the general thoughts here, just meh. Because again, like, we're coming off the high of Viagra Falls, which is an all-time episode for us, easily top 4 or 5. And then the next episode is literally my favorite Psych episode. So this just falls in a tough spot. Like, if this was a season 2 episode, we'd probably like it a little better because you're progressing in the Psych universe and all the kind of stuff. We do get some Psych tropes, some Psych stuff that's 100% always there.
Yep.
But it just lacks a little. And then, I'll just jump right to the writer-director.
Yep.
How would you say this guy's name?
Reginald Hudlin.
Reginald Hudlin. I'm an English major that can't read. But he directed this and True Grits. Another one I hate. Like, I hate. I've watched that episode maybe 5 times. And, like, some people might say, oh, that's a lot. I've seen Shaun 2.0 maybe 90 times. So, like, that gives you kind of, like, scope of how much I watch these things, and like, he's just not the Psych director for us, I guess.
Yeah, he might be the Psych director for others, but here's the thing too, like, the since we started doing the, you know, the writer director, like, when we see, like, the past couple episodes, like I said, since we started doing this, the director has done multiple episodes, like
10, 20.
Yeah, this guy's done 2. Right, yeah. So it's like, okay, let's bring it back.
But you True know, Grits, I believe, is like 6 or 7, like season 6 or 7. So
yeah. So they bring it back. So
and just quickly, like, the thumbprint a director can have on an episode. Like, I've never worked on an episode of television, but I've worked on other projects that, like, people have directed. I've directed. It can change the entire pacing, course, acting, everything. So I think it is kind of not shocking to me when I looked here and I was like, oh, he directed True Grits too. That makes a ton of sense. Like, it made so much sense because it's kind of like a similar storyline where in True Grits, I believe that's the one where the cook is wrongly accused and it's just kind of like clunky. This is clunky.
Very clunky. It's an extremely clunky episode. And I didn't much care. I thought the crime was bland. I thought the execution of all of it was bland. The execution, we'll get to this in just a moment, but the execution of, synopsis, Sean and Gus help a prison guard locate his escaped inmates while on a ferry boat headed to the Channel Islands. That was the most nondescript, like, you could have just said, prison guards escape, and that's all you needed. Mm-hmm. So, like, the execution of how they escape, the escape itself, anything leading up to that beforehand, anything that it led up to, I mean, nothing really hit, and that was a big part of my low score.
And the people, the criminals on the boat, like, I think they were just all like working on set, like delivering food. Maybe one of them was like a driver. And they were like, we're going to cast you for these roles. We're out of money.
Yeah.
Because they were all fucking terrible.
Yeah. Because who's the dude from Tears for Fears? Kurt Smith?
Yeah.
Yeah. They had to pay Kurt Smith for the next episode.
That's right? True. That's probably why. You know? And not to like bash anybody's Apollo acting. Creed
and
bash like acting in these people's like careers, but like, they didn't pull off these roles.
No, they didn't. So written by Steve Franks, Saladin K. Peterson, or Patterson, I should say, and Kel Calhoun. Kel Calhoun, like, that just sounds like a dude that came right out of the West, you know, in the late.
That's a great name.
Right? Maybe a Madden player name, Kel Calhoun. Right, fullback, right? standout guest star. So a pretty well-known guest star in Kai McBride.
I like him.
Yeah, I mean, he was I like him overall as an actor. I didn't particularly like him in this episode. He was
uneven.
Very uneven. He was in the Nick Cage vehicle, Gone in 60 Seconds, right? Which I enjoyed him. He was on that show, Boston Public, which was a very fun little sitcom. Had Rashida Jones, hubba hubba, you know, enjoy her, her work. But yeah, he was very uneven in this episode. And but what we do get, one of the bright things of this episode that we get is in the cold open. And the cold open itself is nothing special, but we get a new Sean, and we get the best young Sean.
You think that's the best young Sean?
That's my favorite young Sean, yeah, without a doubt.
Oh, really?
Because he's the most Sean out of all of them.
I guess, yeah. I mean, he is. I do love him in the next flashback, but I love everything about that next flashback. I do like the flashback kid for the Yips episode. The real young one with the more freckles. So
yeah.
This kid's probably two on my young Sean's. How many do we have? Three? There's like the really young one who's like doing the hide and seek with the flip flops.
Yep.
And then there's
he was it for a while.
Yeah.
And then there's it was three. I think, you know, because he's a little bit older, they're sort of in that teen years. Like the dynamic between him and then this Gus, they're the most, I think, realistic portrayal of the present day Sean and Gus.
That's fair.
That we get. And, right. You know, because they have that quippiness, that back and forth. There's, there's three Seans. This one's my favorite. We don't really need to go in the cold open because it, you know,
three-legged race.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't anything special. So, jumping into the overall story here, I mean, the first third of this episode, first half of this episode,
strong,
right, takes place sort of on one scene. It's on the ferry. So you say strong, I say meh.
It's the strongest part of the episode.
Yeah, which isn't saying much.
No, I like DC and CC. You know, I like the
they were great. They were great.
Like that, like the whole thing, him getting on board, the way he got him on board, you know. Piece of candy type of deal. Yep. Like that setup's pretty nice. You know, the black Al Gore thing kills me.
The black Al Gore.
That was your Halloween costume shot. Yeah, right.
And I do love the Gus seasickness thing because it's the second time now that we get don't go boneless on me, Gus.
Yep.
Right. Or we get the opposite. Don't go boneless on me, Sean. Now we get a go boneless on me, Gus.
That's after that was the Ghost Hunters episode.
Yep. And so you actually nailed it. This would have been a perfect season two episode. Had this season aired during this episode aired during season two, it probably doesn't get as low of a grade as I give it.
No, because like you're now rating on like you've seen so much that it's not kind of fair. Like Spelling Bee, which is one of my favorite ones, is only probably one of my favorite ones because it's the second episode of the show and it was great. But right. If you stacked it up against these, it's not close, you know?
Right. So, yeah. So to paint a picture here, the first, you know, first third, the first act, if you will, if we're to become cinephiles here, you know, takes place on the ferry. And so we're sort of getting introduced here where Gus sort of tricks Sean into going on this environmental expedition, much to Sean's chagrin, and we meet some of Gus's, you know, hippie friends, which actually was pretty funny here. And we get a quick little shot of some guys in orange jumpsuits. Mm-hmm. So like right away, psych is never usually this obvious. That's the thing too. Mm-hmm. Like you see them in the orange jumpsuits, so they're on a ferry. Okay, it's gonna get hijacked. They're gonna try to escape. So right, it was like this was more paint by numbers than psych generally is, but we get a couple of funny moments here before, and that's the other thing too. They just like boom boom boom. It was like real, the pacing on this was not great.
Awesome.
So yeah, it was off. But we get a great line, and I'm with you here because you made a note here where it's the first time I ever noticed that line, and it's the first time I ever noticed this line too. where, you know, where so Gus is Gus, right? This is actually kind of a classic Gus episode where he's on the boat and he, of course, Gus has seasickness, right?
He's got the equilibrium of a bumblebee, which is unbelievable.
Great line. And Gus's seasickness patches have fallen off. And so once he realizes that, he automatically goes boneless. Sean drags him, you know, below deck, phrasing, and tries to get him into the restroom so he can administer, put a new patch on him. And there's a line of convicts. You get Kai McBride there, and he won't let them into the bathroom because the convicts are, they're in line to use the bathroom, and some law can't be in there with an. And he actually says these guys will peel his head like a grape, and Gus just sort of mumbles this line, which you don't really pick up the first few times you watch it, obviously, as we just attested to, where Gus just says the head peel is my fourth greatest fear. And that was actually tremendous.
I literally picked it up for the first time like an hour and a half ago. Going through the notes and watching it, I was like, oh shit, that's what he said.
Yeah.
It's fucking amazing.
Yeah. Cause a little peek behind the curtain. I like to say that from time to time when I'm preparing
twice this podcast so far.
Right. Right. And it's peek behind the curtain in broads. We're going to start a counter. We'll put it right up on the screen there. So what I've started doing, and I think it's really been helpful, is the first time I watched the episode in my notebook, I just write down the scene order. So like police station, scene one, psych office, scene two, and I write down the order. So when I go to type them up, I just write down the scenes as they happen. And then I watch it again, and that's where I sort of fill in certain quotes and certain memorable things and all that. And so this is last night when I was rewatching with the headphones on. That's when I noticed the head peel is my fourth greatest fear, because he mumbles it. But it is such a perfect Gus line. I fucking had paused it. I fucking laughed for a couple of seconds there. Oh, you're muted, Billy.
Sorry. Just doing my sniffing.
Look at there it is. Peek behind the curtain count too.
I know Goo gets like mad about me about the clacking, so I paused to type in there. But yeah, so it's a visual joke for an audio podcast. But regardless, yeah. So where were we? I don't even remember now. You just sidetracked.
That was great. The peel your head like a grape line.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a nice little injection of humor there. You get some good exposition of the people on the boat. You know, these guys are all, you know, dangerous criminals. So it amps up that a little bit. Then they go off to a different direction to get Gus whatever he needs. They come back.
So they need to get into the bathroom. This guy won't fucking let them, and he gives them the fucking, like, 10th degree about it, and you got this line of criminals, and you got this little kid, and he's doing the fucking pee-pee dance, so he lets him in, and then Sean and Gus just kind of look at him. He's like, what, can't you see him doing his little pee-pee dance? Even these guys ain't animals. that was like, when that's one of the highlights of the episode.
This scene basically is the highlight of the episode. So then Gus and Sean go to find a place to get the seasickness patch and, you know, use the bathroom. They come back. They hear the class like rumbling around of a guy who seems to be tied up. They find Craig. We'll call him Craig. We'll call Craig until we get to the best part. So they get him out of there. They take the whatever off that's binding him. And they figure out, you know, the boat's been overtaken by convicts. Well, not technically overtaken, but they have escaped and they're trying to escape. So then, you know, Sean and Gus and Craig form a little bond. And this is without doubt the best scene of the entire episode.
Yeah. And it's also the scene that I really have the biggest beef with, because we've been talking about a pacing issue and we've been talking about a lack of suspense issue. And this is something where Psych would typically build this up a little bit better, right? They should have given us a little bit of something where this happens off screen. something this big shouldn't happen off screen.
A lot of things happen off screen here too, though, throughout the entire episode. Like they just automatically are at the church. They're at a lot of places. And I think that's what, and I do like the, you know, crash cutting out stuff to, you know, jump ahead. Like it's something like, not to brag, I'm an editor in my real life. You have to do that a lot, but I do kind of agree. It would have been nice to see a little something from this, even like a mischievous look on like one of the guy's faces. Uh oh, we got a Swaggin's appearance. She tapped off the mic.
on and off.
Aw, kiss goodnight for daddy. The cutest podcast in the world, even though you can't see what's currently going on. You can hear the tapping.
Yeah, this was a major disappointment because I would have liked. It didn't need to be in a long scene or a drawn out scene. Just something like all the good suspenseful parts happened off screen, and that's a rarity with Psych. This felt every bit like a filler episode.
Yeah, well, maybe they were like, we got two solid episodes. We need another one. We'll stick it in between here and nobody will really care.
Yeah. So we're still on the ferry here. And so, you know, Craig's found a closet. He's been overtaken. And I'll tell you what, too, like we're going to get into the Friday stuff in a second. But we get a great use of the psh, psh, psh. We know the meme guy has really run with it, so isn't Bri. But here, this was over a decade ago. The origin of psh, absolutely psh. Fantastic.
It was great. This has the best chemistry of any scene. And like if they kind of kept it like this the whole episode, there's one other scene where they're teaching Sean how to be hard. That's kind of similar to this. But when we get the, you know, the back and forth of like, and Craig kind of cold reads them as like, I thought you were, you know, just two, you know, grade school friends who like to get yourself in certain situations and like riff on people. And they're like, nah, that's not us. Yeah. And then, you know, they exchange names and Sean's like, Craig. And he's like,
what'd you say?
Craig. And then when he says, have you ever seen Friday? And like, I thought I was going to be able to do it because that was just going to be the intro, was just a mama. I can't, like, Sean does like James Roday. It is spot on, like beautiful, like I loved it. And then he does the, you know, you just got knocked out, and then Gus steps in like we did in the cold open. But this is the best scene. They kind of establish like, okay, we'll cut off the bridge, you know, we'll get the boat shut down so they can't escape or go anywhere. Sean calls Henry, they tell them not to do anything. So basically one of the biggest parts of the episode happens, I don't know, like 10 minutes in.
Yeah, and this is where the director becomes an issue, right? Mm-hmm. Because this scene here is really the scene of the episode, except maybe with the horchata spell. But this was the issue because the performance that Kai McBride gives here is what we should have had throughout the entire episode.
Yeah, he was trending to an all-time guest star.
Yeah. And then it drops, and then he comes back to this level, and then he drops it. Like you said, it was so uneven. And if they kind of kept him at this level, like established that character as this and kept him as this, it would have been just fine. And it probably would have, you know, kept my grade a half tick, maybe even a full tick higher.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we'll get to something where I can like point to exactly where it gets uneven, but like it's just he's over the top. Like hilarity here, but even in the scene before, he's more serious badass, right?
Yeah, because he goes from being hardened to kind of silly to then desperate and pathetic, you know, he's to then like suave, you know, like there was just all over the fucking place. And it was funny too because Swaggins was she was taking a shower earlier. And we keep the door open so we can make sure, like, you know, if anything happens. And she yells, she goes, Mom, she goes, Mama. And then I replied, Mama, Mama. And she goes, Dad, don't do that. That's creepy. And Megan's laughing her ass off because she watched the episode with me the other day too. But I was like, I had, no matter what, like when there's an opportunity to do psych, even when it's not an episode that we love, you got to do it. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. We always take that opportunity.
I pulled a you plus me equals us today, or whatever the hell it is. Like, I nailed it, I think, at the time. Like, and by us, I mean them, and by them, I mean us, because us plus them equals like whatever. And then I played the clip. So anytime you get to pull it out, totally pull it up.
We got to be the same fruit. as you mentioned, right? So at this point in the episode, okay, one of the more suspenseful parts is done off scene. The criminals escape. They find Craig. They take off his gag, unbind him, whatever. And you know, he's like, all right, you guys are G's. You guys, right? And so they kind of start to work together. The only smart thing Sean does in this episode is he calls his dad. And Henry was great in this episode, and we'll get to that in a moment. But he calls and he says, "Dad, listen, this is the situation. You got to get the SPD out here." And I actually love this where Henry goes, "All right, Sean, listen, look, it's a serious situation. Don't do anything drastic. Don't take matters into your own hands. We'll be there. We got this." So he hangs up the phone. He goes, "Yeah, we got to take matters into our own hands."
And that's not what your dad said.
Exactly. And so, but this is a series of real serious Sean fuck-ups, because he does take matters into his own hands. You see the convicts trying to escape. They intervene. They fuck up. And now they're taking the entire place hostage. And now we've got that situation. The Santa Barbara Police Department show up in a boat. And we get Dick Lassie. He's a real prick in this episode.
Absolute bag of hammers, just like a total tool bag. Like, no one, I mean, I kind of get where he's coming from, but again, he cuts down Gus. And like, when Juliet goes, "We have to do whatever we can, two of ours are on the boat," and Lassie goes, "At best, one and a half."
Right. And I loved Henry in this. He really wasn't prominent.
Not helping.
He's not helping Lassie. Like, he's standing up for his son. You don't see Henry stand up for his son a ton. But he does it a couple of times because Lassie is... It's one of the things I love about Lassie's character. It's like, there's the episodes where he's down and out. There's the episodes where he thinks he's right, but he's a bit of a bumbling idiot. Mm-hmm. And then there's the episodes where he's just like fucking full on, "I'm top cop." And he was just, call it Karen,
That was crazy too. Like, I thought that was like, she should have at least like grimaced for a second and been like something should have been there, because it seemed like he was the boss right there. I didn't she like that either.
Yeah. She should have knocked him down a peg and reminded him who the chief is, because he says, "Make a decision, Karen."
Yeah, and then I'll make it. Like, I'll make a decision when I'm ready to make a decision.
Yeah,
you're not telling me when to go, but now is the time. Something like that, and like that is when like a director on set is like looks at the script and is like, "For your character and your character, these aren't balancing out. We need to stroke the pen a little bit here and figure out a way to make this make more sense."
This just kind of hit me, but it really does feel like the director had no idea who these characters really were. They're well-established characters at this point, and he didn't have the feel, you know?
Well, something specifically exactly like that. Also, like, not to go backwards a little bit, but the landing point from like finding the boat, like finding them trying to escape and them escaping, like, you know, they escape Craig. And then, like, 45 seconds later, after they get supplies, Sean's already confronting him. Like, we get the good little, like, walkie-talkie voice thing. But it happened, like, to your point. No suspense. Boom, you're there. Boom. They're sending in fucking snipers. Like,
yeah.
And that's, like, I don't know, 15 minutes in, not even.
Yeah. Yeah. It was real rushed. And, like, don't you think other people on the boat would see fucking obvious convicts running around free and not raise any alarms, right? Or call it in themselves or anything like that. So it just feels like the director didn't have, you know, the true understanding of, you know, the show, the characters, and all that. So
it's like the guy who fucking directed the Doctor Strange movie without watching WandaVision, whatever the fuck his name is.
Oh, Sam fucking, that's a fucking rabbit hole I went down. Oh, jeez, I'm not ready to relive that again. Yeah, fucking Christ.
All right, so let's get to the sniper thing here. They kidnapped DC and CC and a couple of the other guys to switch their outfits for their.
Yeah, we get the old switcheroo here, right? So, like, they've got the hostage situation now, right? They know that they see the fucking the police departments there with snipers. We did kind of miss over like Sean getting fucking booted in the face, which was actually it was a great shot. There was a great little bit of cinematography there, but this was actually pretty clever, right? They put the hostages all out in front of the snipers, so snipers couldn't take a shot because they had human shields in the way. Mm-hmm. And then they pick CeCe and Dee Dee, and this is weird too. Like, why was it only like there was what, four convicts on board? But yeah, only like two of them
were the friendly ones. It was the guy who said, "I also have a dime piece off whatever," to the other guy. And those were the two who escaped. So they were probably like not as close with those two. And they were like, "We'll give them up so they at least have somebody and will escape," you know.
But they made it seem later on in the episode like the four of them planned this for a very long time. So at the very least, you would have thought that one of two scenarios would have happened. All four of them would have banded together and done the same thing and escaped together. Or the other two were like, "Hey, what the fuck are you guys doing?" And then confronted each other. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there was just
something.
There was just a lot of little things that were missing.
Yeah. But you know, you've been out on with people and trips where there's one person you're like, meh.
So anywho, so they pull the old switcheroo, and so there's chaos because they're firing tear gas on the boat. They all storm it, right? And they, you know, Lassie comes and gives the gas mask to Sean and Gus, and Sean's like, "Wait a second, two of them are missing." And then, you know, those two guys obviously are convicts as they look down and it's CeCe and Dee Dee wearing the fucking oranges, and then you see two of the convicts escape on a boat. And again, this also seems preposterous because you would have think the cops that were on the other police boat would have followed them and some sort of shootout would have happened. Like, you don't think these guys never should have made landfall because there was another police boat and there should have been a fleet of fucking sea pigs out there chasing these motherfuckers down, right? So suspending a lot of disbelief in this episode. So now we're at the station. The chief kind of chastises them all. We find out Craig gets fired, and this was an awkward scene because we see Prick Lassie at an all-time high level of prickness, and we've mentioned this a few times before on the show where this was mid to late 2000-aughts, as you might call it, where the gay jokes, if you will, just kind of flew maybe a little too loosely. And so you see Craig sitting down, he's looking down and out, and Sean and Gus approach him, and you know, Craig says, "Well, I had to give my deposition, blah, 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 blah." But Sean goes, "I know dealing with Lassie can be difficult, like crawling over broken glass, or my favorite line here is, or any kind of wiener surgery." That's going to chuckle good. Out of me every time.
I know.
And then, so then Lassie chimes in. He's like, he pretty much is just calling him pathetic. And Gus goes, "Dude, you don't kick a man when he's down." And I actually love this.
I love this.
Last night, he goes, "That's exactly when a man should be kicked. It's the only way he learns. The nuns taught me that."
I do kind of agree, too. It's like not the worst principle. Like, keep a man down a little bit and they'll learn their lesson. Like, if you pick them right back up, they're going to keep getting picked right back up. So I kind of agree with that. So yeah, Lassie comes in over the top, big bad, and Craig kind of deserves it because
oh yeah,
he was pretty easily overtaken. Yeah,
Yeah, but they come face to face. Now we're getting badass Krang, right? But then he backs down so fucking easily, right? Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he could, and as they're face to face, Lassie's actually kind of a boss here, you know, where he says, "Nah, all I can smell is failure," and he walks away. Like we get Prick Lassie, we get badass Lassie. And then I couldn't believe this, Billy. I had to rewind this part a few times. I had to put closed captioning on where Krang says, "You go." This is quoting from the goddamn show here. He says, "That gay dude is right. I am a failure." I couldn't fucking believe it. Now they've mm-hmm. made some, you know, jokes like that, but this was like pretty out and direct and used as an insult. And I was pretty stunned.
I mean, at that time, it kind of flew without any real.
Right.
But the problem with this one, as opposed to like one on The Office, which is kind of a contemporary, I would say close to age wise of this yep. show, is that Michael Scott would say something bad. And then but he was a bad character. He was dumb. He was stupid. This was one of the protagonists of the episodes having that line. Looking back on it now, even then, I don't even remember this line.
But looking back on it now,
because it was kind of said quickly under the breath, like the Gus line, but you can't do that.
No, you can. Mm-hmm. And with The Office, that's satire. You know the mm-hmm. character is well established. You know he's a bumbling buffoon. This was said, and as you say, it wasn't even said antagonistically. It was just nonchalantly.
He's the one of the protagonists of the episode. Right. And it was just like a description of Lassie.
Yeah, and it was unnecessary. You know, because at first it almost sounds like he's saying gangly, mm-hmm. which makes, right, gangly. That's you know, and this is actually an episode where we can actually talk about where, you know, one of our things in the fucking creamsicle, the descriptions of Lassie. They do that a couple of times this mm-hmm. episode. So anyways, now we're back at the office. Krang, Sean, and Gus, they decide we're all in. We're going to work together. And Sean's going over a whole bunch of clues. And Gus is sort of actually doing real good detective work, more so than Sean, really. Mm. And he starts sort of pointing things out. And I love when Sean goes, "Gus, don't just say things for the sake of making noise."
He does that a few times with other things.
Yeah.
Don't just say things that are related to what we're talking about. And they're obviously I think it's barista.
Yeah. Right. So, but this is an instance too where it's a little too convenient. It happens we get the typical Sean, you know, the clue face here, but a name gets thrown out. Guy's like, "Oh, I remember that name." He's going through the files. He goes, "Oh, he was an old cellmate of one of the convicts. Oh, his mother happened to be his GED instructor, your tutor, you know, while in prison." But this is actually another good little reference here where the character's name is Percy Dunn, and Sean calls him the Lightning Thief. He goes, "No, that's
Percy Jackson." Unbelievable.
Which was great. So now this leads us to talking to this character. So it's all happening super fast. The suspense is taken out because it just moves too fast. Bang, 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 bang. You're here. So they go to this woman, Lorraine Dunn's house. She happens to be the tutor of some of these convicts. Her son got mixed up with the wrong crowd. He was a cellmate of one of these guys. He died, I believe, in prison. Mm-hmm. So they're there. And there was a classic psych bit here when they go into someone's house and get, you know, interview the person, and they're offering food. They always take it. And she orders him some. Or she gives him some horchata.
Horchata.
And Gus drinks it. And he just does that weird, Gus,
Have you ever had horchata?
I've never had horchata.
That's fucking amazing.
Is it like a limeade type drink?
No, it's more like, have you ever had rum chata?
What's a rum chata? I feel like I need a rum chata.
It's really good. So it's really good with Fireball. So it's it's like a milky, almost sweetness to it. Horchata is delicious.
I could get down with that. What's the Brazilian drink there? Oh shit. I just had an old man moment. Fuck. All right, I'll come back. Okay. So anyways, you know, she makes this horchata. Gus drinks it. He goes to pour himself some more. He spills it. She freaks out. I just cleaned the place. She grabs a towel from the hamper, and there is a purple bandana. This goes back to early in the episode where Sean happened to see the guy, one of the inmates, wearing a purple bandana. They now know she's lying. They confront her on it. Said, oh, he was here earlier.
Is it the Trace Diabolos? They're all a part of a gang, and that's kind of how they all got him.
Yeah, they're all sort of running together. So they go up into to her son's room. They're looking around. They find that one of the vents, you know, the
screw first was they loose. Find what's one of the largest pencils in all of North America.
Yes, which is a great little sight gag. But then, like, he opens up the vent and he sees like a dust shadow and it just assumes it's a key. It looks like nothing, you know. And he goes, "Oh, there's a key. It's a key to something." And so, like, I don't know. I just had a whole fucking bunch of issues with this. And this was just like, again, one of those things where it's just going too fast.
The comedy of the scene was good, but like the exposition and the reasoning behind it really didn't work out. Nothing was like, like this whole episode again. There's no actual real crime besides the prison break. There's not like a murder or like something.
Yeah, the reveal stinks, you know, like it was just.
So you find out basically that, you know, he was close with this woman because they were, you know, he was friends with her son in prison. So they get some good intel there. They're able to go somewhere else after that. So it's a very like exposition-y thing. They still sprinkle in comedy like all good psych episodes do. I think that's more with the writing. But it's just like, it feels weird at this point in the episode to be at this place. I think that's the whole point. Like, I think as we're breaking this down, it just doesn't fit the puzzle of psych. And sometimes that's good, but like, it feels like they're out of the box for what they normally do.
Yeah, it doesn't feel. Yeah, they're definitely out of their formula, for sure. So now they're back at the station. Mm. A great little line here where Sean, I can't remember exactly what he says, but he finishes a sentence with "pun intended."
The key to this case is a key.
Yeah, that wasn't a pun. You just used the same word twice. Noted and ignored, which is that is
that's Sean going into,
to a fucking nutshell.
Right. That's going into the Billy D banter.
That needs to be a shirt just on the front, just says noted and ignored. No,
that's pretty good. That's like one of those shirts shirts you see at Myrtle Beach that, like, no offense, you might wear.
Hey, you know, I'm comfortable in my skin. You know, I've lived a life, Billy, where I've gone from wearing skids and Jordans to tight rolled jeans to flannel and baggy jeans to now I'm in my prime with floral patterned shirts, you know, shorts that come up just a half inch above my knee and flip flops. Who knows? You know, 10 years from now, I might be wearing the big sun hats and khakis all the time. You know, like
as Sean would say, you got that Pebble Beach going on over there.
Yeah.
I didn't want to know what you think that means.
Right. I'm evolving, right? I'm in my second evolution right now.
Like a Pokemon.
That's right. So while we're at the station here, this was another weird thing that happened. Like, so we've been talking about Krieg, and he's just all over with his performance. Like, they couldn't just, like, they wanted him to be several different stereotypical things, and they should have just sort of, like, a great guest star on psych has a role and they play it to a T. We saw it with Viagra Falls. We saw it with American Duos. We've seen it.
Mary Lightly.
All of them. Like when a guest star hits, they have one note and they fucking knock it out of the park. And they've got Chi McBride trying to be a thousand different types of characters. And it doesn't pay off. Right. Where they're sitting down, they're talking, they're trying to figure shit out, and then he sees Jules, and all of a sudden he goes into like creepy Gus, times 10. And he's like, oh, now he's smooth, he's a player, and he calls Jules a dime piece. Her reaction to this was great. She was very flat, like, what do you mean, dime piece? And she
goes, no. Sean didn't know what it was. She knew what it was.
Right.
But she was like, oh, thank you. She was very into it in the sense that he was being nice. I don't necessarily mind him being smooth all of a sudden, as like if that was the only change in his character. But as added on top to like him not being consistent throughout the whole thing, it was too much.
But what drove me really bananas about this is that when she walked away, he jumps up out of his seat suddenly and looks around the corner. I mean, that's something a fucking, that's something PJ would have done. Right? Love you, PJ. But that was weird. And Gus is even like, whoa, 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 just settle down. You know, like it was just a weird, it felt unnecessary. Like you didn't need that at all. That whole thing. You know, you want to get Jewel some screen time, great. But they just he said dime piece. Sean, that recalled Sean back to when they're on the ferry, when one of the convicts says, hey, man, listen, you're not the only one with a dime piece out there. And then he goes, Northcutt, he's one of the convicts. He's got a girlfriend. So then, boom, they're at the girlfriend's house. And she's like, yeah, he was here. You know, he's very sweet. You know, he's talking about how we're going to have a future together.
At first, she was like, nah, he wasn't here. And they're I think he was here. And they're like, yeah. It was the easiest, like, he's an escaped convict. They all know it. You're not just going to be like, nah, he wasn't here. And then just be like, instantly, you know what he was.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Lazy. Lazy, 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 lazy.
Like, it wasn't even like, ooh, I got you. He had that toy on the fucking boat. I saw it. It was kind of like, I feel like he's trying to be a better father. And she was just like, you're right. He was here minutes ago. He's a convicted felon, escaped from jail. And she knows that.
Yeah. Yeah. Unbelievable. She gets shanked for giving up information that easily, right? So he's like, yeah, he's, you know, he's promised he's gonna, you know, blah, 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 blah. And she even goes, and this was just weird and dumb and lazy, where she goes, he even mentioned about going to church tonight. Like, and then that recalls Sean being back at Lorraine Dunn's house, where he saw a picture of her and her son at a church. So that must be where. You know, so then they now
well, yeah, we also got the tidbit before about her son being involved in a robbery with over $1 million missing. So he's right, like, boom, that's what happened. That's where that's the key is to. So like it all kind of unravels quickly in that moment there. But like even still, it's not one. It's probably one of the worst crimes in psych history.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember if it was season one or season two there when they're. The ring gets stolen. Like that was like,
I think that's really like the third episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. So it kind of felt like that, but I'd even give that episode more props in its story than this.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So they get to the church, right? And you see the inmates, and they're just being very clumsy trying to retrieve this stolen money. You know. Sean and Gus decide to confront him again, poorly planned out thing. Gus gives, you know, Sean's got a candle. Gus is holding a Bible. Like
what? Do waxing?
Yeah. So then they go to confront him. Sean whacks him with the Bible. And then you see Sean and Gus, these two, you know, and, you know, one of them's got a gun and then he puts the gun down or whatever. He puts it down and Sean and Gus think they've, okay, yeah, we've overtaken the guy. And then you got fucking Craig behind him. He's holding the gun. And he's all of a sudden, he's turned. He's badass, you know, Craig. And
now he's a criminal dickhead.
Yeah, and he's going to take the money and run. And so binds them all up. And we get this goofy scene with the two group, you know, Sean and Gus trying to escape. The criminals going, we're going to fucking kill you if we get out of here before you do. And they're racing to undo their binds. And then
they're wiggling fucking, and they're also wriggling.
Right. And they knock the bookcase over on him, and that's going to be enough, right? Like, and then they catch up with Kai McBride, and then all of a sudden he goes from hardened criminal with $1 million to being kind of a bumbling, apologetic boob.
Well, first they fall down, they confront him, and you know, they get him up, stand him up, and they're like, oh, okay, cool. And then he's like, I'm still going to take the money and run.
Yeah.
And he goes, bye. In a very casual bye. And then at the end of the episode, when he like is like rejuvenated and all that stuff, gets the money for the case, all that, he goes, bye. Like, funnily, it's like, deliver the same, like, he's like, that to me is like the standout moment of like, so uneven, inconsistent. So basically, Sean and Gus use the three-legged race to get down the mountain really quick because they're still taped together from being, you know, tied up by Craig.
Which call back to the cold open.
Mm-hmm. So we get that little piece there. Craig willy-nilly changes his mind a bunch, and then it looks like he's going to change his mind for real, and shoot Sean and Gus. What does he do? The convicts have come all the way down. They're right there. He shoots them both. So it's a very, like I kind of liked the double, like, all of a sudden Gus turns around and he's against them in the church. And then, you know, same scenario plays out. It looks like he's going to shoot them and then he shoots the bad guys. So that symmetry there was pretty decent. Again, that's probably more to the writing than the directing of it. And we get, like, that whole scene playing out. And that's kind of the ending.
Yeah, but how isn't he like 10, 20 miles away by that point?
He's in a fucking car.
Yeah, and that seems a couple of minutes. That's enough to be in a car if you're fucking Florida.
It would have to be like the spiral staircases of like windy roads for you to legitimately catch up with them on foot, three-leggedly, even if you roll down the mountain.
Right.
Chris Farley style from Black Sheep. So,
right.
Yeah, nothing really adds up here. I think we've for the show we love so much, we've kind of brutalized this episode, but
yeah.
It just goes to show you the ending here is not up to snuff. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. So if I fucking hocked a loogie on fucking camera, I apologize. But yeah, the reveal, escape prisoners. How? Way too easily. Why? To recover stolen bank money. I mean, this is as simplistic, and I hate to say it, as lazy as Psych has really been, you know, in the 5+ seasons.
I'm telling you what happened.
We've done.
They got the worst episode of the year. They're like, this can fit anywhere. Where do we put it in between our two best episodes? Maybe ever.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what time of the year this airs.
August 25th. I just looked it up.
Yeah. So I'm going to say, yeah, no one's paying attention, right? Because now this one goes, and then you're starting to enter September sweeps.
Right. Well, what I would say is, like, so it aired then. I'm assuming they probably, like, wrote/shot it in, like, holiday Christmas area. Because it probably takes a while to, like, turn it around. So, that would be my guess. This was the holiday break episode.
Right. But they picked a good time to air it because it's, what, Labor Day weekend? People are away.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you enter September sweeps, baby, with Sean 2.0, right?
So, anyway. Also, quick aside, USA shows are so weird because, again, this was airing in August. So that means the show probably started airing in July because this is like the seventh episode of the season.
Right.
So like USA shows aren't like real shows as much as we love Psych. They're like fake shows that don't run in like the September like area. Like so most like Seinfeld would debut in like September.
True. So with that said, William, let's get to the Thundercats hoe.
Watch out.
Oh, yeah, there we go. So, most memorable moments, Craig,
Mama,
Gus going boneless, Horchata. I wrote Joe Piscopo, I forgot.
Those Joe Piscopo endorsed protein shakes. That's the beginning. But also, this is the thing we actually kind of skipped over, the collateral reference, where that's where Sean's being taught how to be hard, which is probably another one of the best scenes in this thing, where Craig's you just take the last thing he said and repeat it back to him. Like, oh, you don't want to shoot me? So like
there's that's subtlety to it. I get it.
I don't think this is as much subtlety as you think. Yeah. And then, so like he's teaching him all that stuff. And there's the collateral reference. It's like, this is collateral, except I'm Jamie Foxx and you're Tom Cruise. You're Tom Cruise. Yeah. Like the way he delivers it. And then this is another good part of Craig where he's like, are you finished? Sure? No. You sure? Like if Craig was that the whole episode, he's great.
This is probably at least a half point higher on the rating scale for me, if that's the case. Least memorable favorite moments. It was kind of bright. His performance was all over the place. He was a straight man. He was the foil. He was tough. He was weak. He was smooth. Just he needed to find his lane and go with it and go all in. And he just it just didn't work out. So favorite character. So I see what you're writing down now. I actually thought about these guys. Very, because they were only in the episode very briefly, but they played Dirty Hippies so well. You chose CC and DC.
I sure did.
I thought about it. Guster! You know, they were such dirty hippies. It was great. I mean, I was Sean. I mean, I said, I guess. And even Sean wasn't his full Sean-ness in this episode.
Oh, no. It wasn't really close for who it would be. Like, it was kind of like Lassie could get it.
Yeah.
Or Henry.
Lassie. Well, yeah, Henry wasn't in enough, but Lassie could have... Yeah, this was just a tough episode. A couple of quick quotes here that we didn't have from earlier on. In order to reduce carbon emissions, you guys refuse to ask people to use your first names.
CC and DC. By the way, you see the banner? I'm doing topical banners now.
Ah, dirty hippie.
That was actually perfect. So I'm now, we do this podcast, obviously, also visually on like YouTube, Twitch, whatever. And we have banners for each part of it. And now I'm doing running counters for when Joe says stuff. And I actually put, you only said it three times.
Who the fuck is Joe?
Doc, as what he says. And I put dirty hippie count, and you only said it three times, but I knew when I put up the banner, you'd say it again. So now dirty hippie count at four.
I love that. What was the total broad count when we were in Myrtle Beach?
Oh, I lost count. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we were well into the double digits. I love it. It's my new feature of the show.
Now, you said it once before.
Yeah.
So now you just said it again. So we're at broad count two. So far, we'll just keep it peek behind the curtain, broad count, and then maybe add some to each episode.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. This is fantastic.
No clear cut character, no clear cut standout person in this episode because. Kind of the pits for Psych.
Yeah, there was one thing here too that I did like, and I wrote this down. Where Sean, when they're being held hostage and they're trying to gain the trust of the inmates, mm-hmm. and Sean just goes to Gus, goes, "Give him the nod," you know. And Gus goes, "The nod only works when I'm doing it to the brother behind the counter at Jamba Juice."
That's unbelievable.
Oh, and then this was where I forgot about this. If I remember this, I would have put. DC and CC as mine as well. When the hostages take the two of them to do the old switcheroo, and he goes, "I voted for Obama," because the inmates, one was white and one was black, and he goes, "I voted for Obama," like that was gonna change the fucking inmates' mind. This fucking killed me.
I did laugh at that. I was like, "That's topical," but like, I get it. It's good.
Yeah. So let's jump into the creamsicle, baby, and bring this sumbitch home.
What now?
The creamsicle.
Boom, oh. Boom, boom. Muffins.
I gotta make a note, so I put a sticky note here somewhere. Like Billy Saunders, don't forget. So running gags. So with the pineapple, I actually caught these two. I didn't have
Ooh.
To. I caught these two. You ready for this? One was on some broad's bag on the. Oh. I had that pre-written down. That
yeah, I did.
She's walking by. She's just an extra, and she's got one of those beach bags, and there's a bright yellow pineapple on it. And then in Lorraine Dunn's house on the mantle, it sort of looked like a brass pine. Ooh. Bookend. So I picked up on those.
Ooh, that would be good. Pineapple bookends.
It would
That's
be.
What I need.
Yeah. Upside down book. For you, they'd need to be upside
That's
down.
That's true.
Descriptions of Lassie. We got a couple of them this episode.
I mean, the fucking penguin only lankier is like, so that one's so good because it's not a spot on one of him where it's always like Tony Randall in a summer stock production. Of the Wizard of Oz, portrayed by Mr. Bean. Like, they're all spot on, tall, lanky tunes. This is a penguin, so true, just black and white.
Yeah,
fucking
only
lankier. And then this is another one after, Craig does the inappropriate one.
Yeah.
I think he says, "I'll whip your Ichabod Crane looking ass," who I believe is the character from Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah, Ichabod Crane. He's the headless horseman, right? Like, he's just this big, tall, lanky, doofus guy.
Outstanding.
It was fantastic. I love that one. That one got me. I love the Gus Don't Be it. The Gus Don't Be the one game at Chuck E. Cheese that isn't broken.
Yeah.
Right. So
which seems true. Like it would be a good thing.
Right. So was this the only Gus nickname in this episode when your first one was Black Al Gore?
I don't know if it counts, but it should count.
It should count because that was great.
That's fucking. That was your Halloween costume, Sean.
No, I've heard it both ways. No, I'd rather's. No real wordplay. No fake businesses. Henry, Father of the Year. He sticks up for Sean. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, when pretty concerned on the phone too.
Yeah. A couple of obscure references here. Friday, obviously, mm-hmm. We talked about Percy Jackson. There was a Scooby-Doo reference. There was a Hercules, which I believe is Nutty Professor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then a John Candy reference. And then this leads us to our much talked about ratings. Billy, I'll go first as mm-hmm. as you type yours out. I was going to go with a 5. I gave it a 5.5 because I felt 5 was like.
I mean, for us, that's basically like negative points because I don't think we've rated anything below like a 6.9.
Yeah.
Nice. In like forever. That's like our like maybe not man. We didn't really like it, but like, it's like basically like if the episode we consider very good, it's like from a 7 to a 7.9.
To borrow from another popular podcast, this one falls below the equator.
Yeah, I would say the equator of the show is probably like a 5.9, 5.8 maybe. So I think I still have it like below the equator for what we would have, which is, you know, it doesn't float, right? It's like a 5.7. There were like the thing about this episode is there are memorable moments from it.
Right. And there's moments that make us chuckle, but it was just so all over the place.
Yeah.
And it just fell short. That's like, we, here's the thing. We hold the episodes that we love to such a high standard, that when it doesn't meet that, it's a little jarring, jarring.
Indeed.
So with that said, come on, son.
Come on, son. Get out of here.
Next week's episode. What do we got? Tell us what we got coming up. Right.
So I'm actually very interested to see what you rank this, what you think about this, because this is 100% my favorite episode of Psych ever. And the funny thing about it is the first time I saw it, I didn't like it at all.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Declan Rand, right? That's his name, Declan Rand.
By the way, it's Sean 2.0.
Sean 2.0. Nestor Carbone's guy liner is fucking epic. And a little distracting in this episode.
Susan. He's the guy from Suddenly Susan. So literally, like, I don't think I watched this for like 2 years after I initially watched Psych, and then one day I like threw it on, and it easily became my favorite episode because we'll get into it, you know, in great detail. But Sean is probably not the most ever playing from behind in this episode, but it's top 2 or 3. All time of him like having to compete with somebody, and this guy, like, this is X versus Sever. This is
100%. Yeah,
two top dogs going at it. Like the old detectives, you know, from Viagra Falls, they're up to the standard, but they get bumped down, they get beaten. This guy bests Sean the entire episode, pretty much, and in the end, he gets the girl too.
But what makes it unique is that, like, when Sean's going up, like, say in Viagra Falls against other detectives, that's one thing because they're detectives. He's an amateur, right? He's a psychic. What makes this episode so great is that Declan Rand is also, he's a profiler, right? Yeah. Like it's
job they only have on fake TV shows.
Right. He's getting beat at his own game, right? Not just like getting beat by a detective. He's getting, because he is also a con artist, and that's what makes it so great. And that's what makes the Sean Jules relationship and the Sean Jules breakup, and then like
there's like,
it, like, so perfect.
I'm so excited for this episode because there's so much comedy too, and I like I know it like the back of my hand, but like I cannot, like, I don't even want to say anything. I want to see if you pick up all the little things I've picked up over the literally probably 4, 5, maybe 6 years now of watching this at least like once a month minimum. Yeah.
I think our two, like, my favorite episode and your favorite episode are in this season, Viagra Falls and Shaw 2.0. So it's, next week's going to be a fucking hoot. So you definitely got to want to make sure you follow us on Twitter at Da Pineapple Boys.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, because next week's episode is going to be fucking epic as hell. So William, as I kind of stole your thunder a bit, I didn't mean to, but remind the people where they can find us.
iTunes and Spotify, right? But you can find all of us in this little shared universe on Facebook and wherever you get your podcasts, obviously. But it's us, Pineapple Boys. I've heard it both ways. And then my other podcast, which rumors has it, we're doing one soon, PCP, Pop Culture Pile Driver. Then your other podcast, TLDR. And then the guy who's on it with you has another one, Change My Mind. They talk about, it's really CMM, it's hockey equipment. And then Dork and Mac and Goo. And then our streamers, the Dork Boys stream on YouTube, and you and Shime stream on Twitch when you do.
Yeah. We use streamers. It's a loose term.
Yeah, party favors at this point.
Right. So until next week, William, wait for it.
Frank says hi.
And this is where it gets